fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about all kinds of things on the show. We're going to get into stuff like red tide. We're going to get into fish. We're going to get into what you can catch, what you probably won't catch. We've got all kinds of other stuff. Now, Robert's pointing at peewee shrimp season just started.
Yep.
All right. Well, you could have just said it. You don't have to point at it. You're standing here. Robert's in the chair across from
you. You're the man in charge, so I try not to interrupt.
Yeah, okay. All right. I'll go with that. Robert, the polite one. You know, every year it's... Hello, RJ.
Hello there.
Are you alive or are you half dead?
I'm half dead. I have a Florida cold, the worst type of cold you could ever have. It's beautiful, wonderful, hot outside, and I'm shivering.
Yeah, if you could be shivering now, that's an accomplishment.
It is.
Because 3 seconds outside, you're covered in sweat and going, oh, my God. But I keep thinking, okay, I walk outside, and in 3 minutes, I'm sweating, and you're feeling kind of nasty. And then when I grew up, you go out 3 minutes outside, and you're watching each other for the white spots of the frostbite starting.
Right.
So, I'm okay with the heat.
Yeah, I'll go with the heat, too.
Yeah, I'm okay with the heat.
I agree with that 100%.
All right. Everybody's talking about red tide. We got thunderstorms. We got fish. I want to start off one of the fish. And let's start off with, let's see, what do we got here on the list? How's the snook fishing going right now?
Pretty good. A lot of little peanuts around inside the harbor. You know, most of the better fishing for those has been over on the middle east side of the harbor, say from just above Pirate Harbor down to Matt Lachey, because none of that really was affected by any of the red tide. And the fish that could run from the beaches and the passes ran inside. So we've actually seen a little bit better numbers than what we would normally see for this time of year on them.
A lot of snook around. Not a lot of big ones being caught. Up in the Myakka, you've still got some great big snook. Best baits right now, there is some white bait around. You can find some white bait over on the east side of the harbor, a little bit there. Jug Creek's got a little bit. And we've heard about some possibly around some of the markers in the harbor.
Yeah. And there's also been a little bit showing out on the, you know, out along the beaches too, because the red tide has started to dissipate a little bit, but it's on the surface, so you got to be careful not to kill all your bait.
I'd say the biggest problem right now is if you go out and you do find white bait, and you're going to be, if you're from Cape Hayes north in the upper harbor, no big deal, you go wherever you want, you're probably going to be all right. But if you're out along the beaches or in the intercoastal, what you're going to run across is these little surface patches of red tide. So if you can catch white bait there, you need to have a live well where you can turn the recirculating water off so it cannot pump new water into the well. So because if you're going across and you run across the patch of red tide, that red tide is going to get in your live well. It's going to kill your bait. If you can shut off the water intakes and just recirculate the water inside of the well itself, without exchanging new water and, you know, dumping it out, your bait's probably going to live good all day. And so whenever you get in an area and you know the water's pretty good, you open it up, you recirculate in some fresh water. Now just remember, when you catch bait out there and you put it in a live well, you're going to have to run that before you can enclose the system and make it a closed system. You need to run that well about 15 minutes. Because when you catch that bait in the net and you dump it in the well, you've scared the poop out of this poor little bait.
Yep.
Poo came out. I mean, it's in that water. You've got to give it time to get that water in and get new water in there, get all that old water out. So now they're in clean water again. And then they're going to live pretty good. The biggest mistake people make when they're trying to keep, like they throw a cast net, get a little bit of bait, put it in a bucket, they dump them in there and expect them to live. Well, I got news for you. If an alien came down and grabbed your silly redneck butt and picked you up and threw you in a bin in a spaceship, you're pretty much going to have a contaminated environment.
Yes.
You know, you're probably, unless you've got a good set of Depends on, I'm sorry, an alien picks me up, throws me in a big well, and stay there. Ah, poo probably came out at that point, too.
Yes.
So, you know, give this fish, so if you put them in a little bucket, you know, dump some fresh water in from where you're catching them, put a little more water in, then dump almost all that water out and refill it entirely after a few minutes go by. You know, give them time to get it all out. Just point of interest.
No, absolutely.
I would still say, though, if I'm going out, I'm going to have dead bait with me. I'm definitely going to have dead bait.
I'm taking some frozen shrimp, cut sardines, cut thread fins, even taking some mullet. You know, and that's going to be my fresh bait insurance in case I can try to catch a fresh ladyfish or a small jack or something like that to cut up. Because, you know, it's that time of year where it's hot. The fish are a little lethargic. They're taking cut bait. They're going by smell more than they are sight. They want that guaranteed meal, so they have to exert less energy rather than chasing after something that's real lively. You're coming on the backside of, you know, the spawning season for both tarpon and snook. So right now they're wanting to build up more heavier nutrient levels to reinvigorate themselves for all that expended energy that they use to either produce eggs or sperm, and while fighting Mother Nature itself.
Yeah, so basically, it's so hot, hot water doesn't hold oxygen, oxygen levels are real low, a lot of fresh water. So, tough environment for a fish. If you're going to catch fish, throw out a chunk of dead bait, or maybe the white bait will work. I don't know, shrimp works pretty good, but whether you got dead shrimp, or mullet, or ladyfish, or whatever you got, let it sit. When the fish hits, don't move it, thinking, okay, well, if I move it a little bit, he'll chase it down. You're probably going to ignore it. Leave it set. Get the hit. You're going to feel a little bump, then it's nothing. Then a little bump, then nothing. And then the fish will take off with it. But if you move it on them, you're going to take you 2-3 times as long to get that fish, and you're just not going to have that great a day. If you can steel yourself to, oh, I got a hit, leave it alone. Oh, I got a hit again. Leave it alone. Okay, there he goes. He's on it. Because it's kind of like a nudge. And then, okay, like a little taste test. And then, okay, that's fine. Pick it up, and I'm going to swallow this. That's why it takes so long. You get this little nudge, like, what's this? And a little kind of like a taste test. And then they actually put it in their mouth and start to swim off. That's when you've got them. Until then, probably not. One of the things that actually works pretty good, and fish bites.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of this because of all the dead bait.
Absolutely.
When I'm using chunks of crab, ladyfish, mullet, even the shrimp, a lot of times it comes off the hook pretty easy. So what I do is pick a corresponding-ish flavor of fish bites. Now, what I like about the fish bites is it's little strips or triangles. I usually use the strips so I can make it just long enough. Like if you've got a piece of frozen shrimp on, a good idea is to take a little half-inch, three-quarter-inch strip of fish bites. Pick what color you like, orange, yellow, green. I'm not sure the color makes a tremendous amount of difference or not. They got white. You got all kinds of different colors. But put that on the hook first, and then put your frozen bait on. Because real bait is still real bait. But that way, if they pick that piece off and you miss them, that fish bites is still on there. It's almost impossible to get off the hook. And that's when you'll start nailing that fish. It's kind of like a backup insurance policy.
Right.
And on that shrimp flavor, I have used it in Lake Hopatcon in New Jersey. I've used it in Okeechobee. I've used it in the harbor. Used it in the Gulf of Mexico. I like having it a bag of it in my tackle box because I don't always use it, but when I remember to, it's really good stuff, and it's made right here in Florida, up in St. Augustine. Augustine.
Nice.
St. Augustine up there by Jerkersville. Yeah.
Hey, your redneck is showing.
Oh, God. All right. You know, trying to get around to some of this stuff, you know, we know there's... You know, there's things that we know to be true. And we're wondering, are you the fourth thing, RJ?
The fourth thing that we know to be true?
Yes.
Could be.
Because we know, let's see, drunks.
Children.
Children, right? Yoga pants. They always tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And RJ, are you the fourth?
Definitely not. Definitely
you're,
not.
You're not.
I'm willing to embellish it at a drop of a hat.
That's, you're not as truthful as a drunk, a child, or yoga pants.
No, absolutely not. That's my Irish in me.
I forgot you're Irish.
That's
yeah,
right.
That'll just, take care of that whole
you
thing.
Tell stories. That's your whole deal.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We've been going through that. A little bit about afternoon thunderstorms. We get a lot of questions and about the effects of an afternoon thunderstorm.
Sure.
So people don't understand, because if you live in the northern states, let's say you're in Tennessee, Ohio, Iowa, Wisconsin, you really don't have much for localized rain stuff.
No, it's usually a frontal system that comes through that's pretty significant.
Yeah, and you know, you can see it coming across in the weather, and it'll come in, you know, it comes over the Rockies.
It's usually preceded with a tornado in a lot of instances.
Yeah. Tornado, okay. Here the train is coming, is rolling around. No, never mind. Train, tornado. See, there was actually a reason for that. But you see this big front coming in, and so you kind of know it's going to rain, and usually it'll last, you know, part of a day or a day or so, you know. It's not like, okay, you've got a little downburst coming.
Right. Yeah, and very seldom is it localized the way we have.
But when you go out to the southwest, the semi-arid desert climate.
Yeah.
And that's actually what southwest Florida is. We don't think of swamps as being semi-arid desert, but we actually are.
Yeah.
We're semi-arid, and we're hugely dependent on local rainfall. And one thing people don't understand is what causes local rainfall. Believe it or not, if we were having a drought, and we got a little bit of rain, and nobody mowed their grass anywhere in the county, if everybody let their grass just keep growing tall, we would get more and more and more rain.
Absolutely.
Because the first
and
rain...
there would be a more consistent pattern to it.
Yeah, it would start to flare up every day. A lot of our rains, the afternoon thunderstorms, are literally created by the heat rising, taking moisture with it, forming the cloud. The cloud gets so heavy with moisture, it rains back down. And when it rains, we get these downdrafts, these downbursts. And it creates a massive amount of wind and all the rain falling very quickly. And the ice crystals up in the clouds creates a lot of lightning from the static electricity.
Yep.
But the first rain generates the second rain, which generates more rain and more rain and more rain. It's when you don't get those first rains, that's when we don't really get... and we don't have rainy seasons anymore. We have a rainier season. Because we have so much shingles, concrete, blacktop, and mowed yards.
Yeah.
I mean, we like it to look nice. I like my yard mowed, you know. But if we were going to create rain, we have to let all the grass grow up, you know, 8, 10 inches a foot tall or more. So it traps the water and the moisture. Then the heat starts the evaporation of it. Goes up, forms clouds, creates a storm, and it rains back down, puts more water down there because it collects water from the harbor and the rivers and the Gulf, and, you know, so more water is deposited.
Well, and a perfect example of that to explain, like, the rooftops and the asphalt and all that good stuff is you hear them talk about the I-75 corridor now in the last couple of years, even though we've been talking about it for 20 years. You can actually watch the thunderheads build on the east side of I-75 and start to work their way towards the west and stop and then just kind of follow the line of I-75. And what is happening is that concrete is so superheated from the friction of the cars driving on it, plus the just flat out being a concrete that absorbs heat, it's creating a thermal barrier of heat going straight up.
Well, hot air rises, and it's what creates a sea breeze. The land heats up very quickly, and the air above, you know, over the land starts to raise up. It goes up. Heat rises, like what causes a hot air balloon to fly.
Right.
And so as that air goes up, the air over the water has to come in to take its place.
Yep.
And so the air on land goes up. The air over the water comes in towards land to go up with the rest of the air. It's being pulled with it.
It's a vacuum effect.
It's a vacuum effect, exactly. So that's what causes a sea breeze. And it's the exact same thing, much more intensified on I-75. That river of asphalt literally changes the climate between coastal Florida and inland Florida.
Absolutely.
And it does it on the East Coast, does it on the West Coast. We got I-95 and I-75. It keeps the coastal climate different than the interior climate of Florida. Because I live on the, my house is on the east side of I-75. My store is on the west side. And literally, there's a couple of degrees difference in temperature, one side of I-75 to the other. And it rains more consistent and steady on the east side of 75 because it's mostly natural ground. So you're talking tall grass, trees, a lot of moisture on the ground, creates a lot of moisture in the air, a lot of localized rain. Rains that develop over Charlotte Harbor, the Gulf of Mexico, as they're coming in during the day, very seldom cross both US 41 and I-75. It might get across 41, but that'll weaken the storm front enough where it won't get to the east side of I-75.
Right.
And a storm coming in from the east, it may get across I-75, but it'll tear it apart, but it usually won't cross 41.
Yeah.
And you have the two rivers, I-75 and 41, but they're rivers of asphalt. If you had moved here in the 1970s, you would have known that Punta Gorda was one climate. Well, let's say Port Charlotte had a climate, and you could really not grow royal palms on the Port Charlotte side, but you could on the Punta Gorda side, yeah, because the Peace River literally changed the climate between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. Punta Gorda has quite a few royal palms. Port Charlotte has little or none. Fort Myers is a city of palms because of the Coosatchie River. As the cold fronts come down, it changes between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda, then changes again from Punta Gorda to Fort Myers because of the Coosatchie River. That's another climate boundary.
Yeah. Those rivers are creating moisture and creating protection against the cold that comes down, so you get less frost as you work your way south, and those are a real defined actual line. You know, most people kind of look at it on a map and it's an invisible line to the average person, but you actually have a defined line because of the actual rivers.
All right. Now, one of the things we hear a lot about, you know, the afternoon storms, does it affect the fishing? There was a lot of explanation about storms. Yeah. That was too much. Sorry about that. But with the storms, I was out fishing and it was in a little island, Crab Trap Island, over off Alligator Creek. And we were just catching snook free line and whitebait. And it was one snook after the other, having a great time. I had three customers on the boat, and we were having an awesome time. The snook were anywhere from 24 to 30 inches, and just everything was going really good. And then this little cloud came over, little dark cloud, and it rained on us. Now, we got one probably good 30-second burst of rain, and then it rained for about two or three more minutes as a light rain, drizzle, and gone. The whole thing didn't last 5 minutes, but the fish quit biting. And so I started to re-rig. I had whitebait under a bobber. I had freeline shrimp. I had freeline whitebait. Finally, it was shrimp under a bobber that started a meeting again. They wouldn't touch the freeline whitebait. They didn't want it at all. When that little cloud went over, that splatter rain, they ate shrimp under a bobber. Not free line, not on the bottom, had to be under the bobber. And it was amazing, but they wouldn't, you know, and I've seen it go both ways where they're eating shrimp, then they won't, then they want something else, white bait or cut bait or whatever it is. It just happened to be that they were eating all free line white bait, wouldn't touch it under a bobber, tried all different kinds of shrimp rigs. Finally, the shrimp under the bobber, not popped, it had to be just drifting.
Just sitting there.
Just sitting there under a bobber. And we started catching a snook, and I bet you we caught at least another 8 or 10.
Now, did that cloud going over change something, you think?
That would be, well, obviously it did. What would it have changed?
I mean, did it change the barometric pressure coming down like a normal giant front that we're used to, or was there any lightning involved with it?
No lightning. RJ, did, I don't think one cloud could change your barometric pressure, do you?
probably localized it will, you know, a real small area. In order to do all of that, you know, in order for the stuff to go up, the barometric pressure has to change.
So,
and to get a downburst, the barometric pressure has to change. So I guess in a small area it's possible, but, you know,
a little microclimate.
Right, yeah, don't hold me to that, but it sounds like that would be. The thing that I was thinking of is it got dark.
Yeah.
It got dark, and whatever dark means to snook, it was time to do something else, you know. And then it got light again, so now, again, since they don't have watches, they probably have no idea how long a day is.
Well, they could have thought that was, you know, nighttime and it's morning again.
Yeah, wow, geez, morning already.
Yeah, boy, that was a short night. You know? Yeah. I could tell you, the other day, I went home, I was so tired, sat on the couch, passed out. It was probably about 4:30, and I mean, I'm out like a light. I wake up, and I'm looking, and the thing's saying 7:30. I look outside, it's just like, I literally thought it was the next day. And it was just, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours later, whatever it was. A little nappy time I wasn't expecting. And I was completely discombobulated. I thought it was 7:30 in the morning. I get up, I'm going to make coffee, and wait a minute, it's night. Wait a minute, Terry's still up. What am I doing here? Okay. But it could be the rain coming down on the water. That's a lot of noise. That's scary. You know, I mean, just the rain hitting the water creates a tremendous amount of noise. A little more oxygen.
Yeah.
Or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good guess.
Yeah. Well, the noise, I think, is a good guess. I mean, if, when you pull into an area with the engines going, they stop biting for a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I would say most often, yeah.
Yeah, I would say it's probably...
Unless you're on a boat with my dad. My dad's the only one I know who can pull up with a boat, hit reverse, stop the boat, throw the line in and catch a fish. Yeah. Anybody else, the fish would be heading to Texas.
Right.
But literally, I've watched him come up on the shoreline. I'm in the front of the boat. He's running the motor. Broom in. Oh, I'm too close. Back up with the boat. Throw an anchor out. Throw a rod. All within a couple of minutes. And the fish bite. You know.
Yeah, well, I'd go with the, I'd
never
going to
happen.
I'd go with the noise theory. The thing about snooks wearing watches, I can't buy that. But I think it could be the noise because it is a lot of noise when you hear, you know, as a diver when you're underwater and it rains over the top of you.
Well, just think of being in a tin roof.
Yeah,
if you're in
exactly,
on a lanai with an aluminum pan roof without insulation on it.
Right.
And the rain comes down, that's got to be what it's like underwater.
Yeah, so that'd be my guess, is that it's the sound that puts them off the bite for a little while.
Now, that was a very small thing, but on a bigger scale, what happens when a storm front comes in, fish feed really intensely before a storm front.
Yes.
All the fish are out, and if they're going to eat, and depending on how severe the storm front is, the more the fish will eat. And most of us believe it's in preparation for not being able to eat for a few days.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever been up in an airplane, you go on an airplane, you go up, and that pressure change to your ears, you don't feel good, you know, and then you come down to land. You ever notice most people eat before they go on a plane?
Yeah.
And if you're eating, not as many people eat when they get off the plane, or they might have a few cocktails because they want to feel better, but, you know, you get off a plane and that sudden pressure drop really can screw up your ears and the way you feel. Just your whole head gets out of whack. Can you imagine if you had this little tiny thing inside your body that when you squeezed it, you could sit down, and when you expanded it, you would stand up?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the way a swim bladder works. If they squeeze it, they drop down in the water. When the swim bladder expands, they raise up in the water.
Correct.
So you get these little tiny micro changes in how much buoyancy they have to keep them right up off the bottom, 2 feet off the bottom, next to the surface. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Little tiny changes in flotation. Well, air pressure, 14 pounds per square inch, pushes down on the water surface.
Right.
So if you reduce the air pressure, you're reducing the pressure on the water, which is going to make the water pressure change. It's going to become lighter. That swim bladder there is going to expand slightly, make it harder for them to stay upright, make it harder for them to stay in place in the water. A lot of fish like bass will go really into some very thick weeds. The thicker the grasses and stuff, just so they can stay upright. They can hold themselves there. And fish in salt water, most of the time, will go to deep water.
Right.
Because the deeper the water, at 30 feet, there is no, a storm really isn't going to change the atmospheric pressure, won't change the water pressure, because at 30 or 33 feet, there is another 14 pounds per square inch. It's another atmosphere.
Right.
Literally, the pressure's doubled, so you would have to have a hurricane. Dramatic drop in pressure to change the pressure down at 30 feet. But the closer you get up to, you know, the shallower it gets, and most of us are fishing in 1 to 3 feet of water, that has to be a pretty significant change. When the air pressure changed, the water pressure would change.
Yeah. No, that makes absolute sense. You know, and it's the air pushing down on it, and it's going to slow it down as it gets deeper, but people don't realize, because we are fishing in such shallow water, that some of the very subtle barometric pressure changes here can make a very profound difference on how the fish are going to react.
Because if you're used to fishing 10, 12, 15 feet of water, that's a lot of pressure difference between 1 and 2 feet of water.
Oh, absolutely.
Huge, huge amount of variant there. At 15 feet, that's half another atmosphere.
Right.
So the shallower the water is, the greater the storms have effect on the fish.
Right. And I think the other thing is, like, we kind of got away from it from the beginning of it with your description of your fronts up north. When you get a rainstorm, when they come through, you know, you can call your buddy up and it's raining at his house, you know, on the other side of town, you know, so their storms are pretty much a whole large area versus our storms that come through because of that arid climate creating an isolated thunderstorm. It's literally isolated to the fact of it can be literally raining buckets in your front yard and bright and sunny in the backyard without a single drop on it. You know, that's a true isolated thunderstorm. You've done it with me out on a boat running through the harbor and run the edge of a thunderstorm, put your hand out and get it completely wet, and your body's perfectly dry as you're going right by the rain falling down. So because those storms are so small, I don't think it has as large of an effect on our fish.
Well, wintertime cold fronts would, because it affects the whole state.
Yeah, because it's coming across the whole state, which is kind of what you see more up north, because those storm systems they get are almost like smaller fronts that don't necessarily cover the whole state, but they cover large sections of the state.
So we're going to have to get some type of meteorologist person to let us know that if we have a downburst, rainstorm, you know, heavy South Florida rain, if that pressure changes a lot under that cloud. Because if you have a dramatic pressure change under that cloud, now you got the noise of the water hitting, you've got a pressure change which affects the swim bladders, which, you know, messes up the fish. Mm-hmm. That might be why, because most of the time I will tell you with a localized storm, if it's not that intense, I don't think it has a lot of effect on the fishing whatsoever.
I think it goes through so quick that it doesn't phase them as much. And the other thing is, we're dealing with totally different species of fish. Our fish are kind of used to that, acclimated to those fast-moving afternoon thunderstorms. So maybe their swim bladders are a little bit more adjusted to it than, say, some of your other species of fish from further north where...
I'm not sure that would be true or not. I don't know if they could get acclimated to their swim bladder readjusting without their...
Well, if you're dealing with a species that's used to it, you know what I mean?
I'm not sure. I'm going to allow you to have that one, but I'm going to say I don't know if I believe. RJ, any weigh in on that? Do you think a fish could actually get used to pressure change?
Well, I don't know about getting used to pressure change, but there's got to be some natural selection going on over the eons of these fish evolving that they're not quite as disturbed by the weather.
All right, I'm going to give you that I don't think you're quite as truthful as yoga pants, but okay. I'm going to say you're probably pretty close. I'm going to give you a little bit on that one, Robert. I'm just not sure I'm going to agree with that, but I think that pressure change underneath the small storm is probably fairly minimal because it's such a small area. And I could say usually when I'm out in the harbor, if it rains, all I do is get cooled off a bit. The only time I really run from rain is if there's a lot of lightning. Other than that, it doesn't really... One thing, speaking of lightning and effects on fish, number one fish I've seen affected by thunderstorms is tarpon. And I don't know if it's because of their hearing, if they have a really good sense of hearing and the thunder bothers them and just chases them off, or if the electricity runs them off. But tarpon fishing's pretty good right now. What's up with the tarpon, Robert?
They're in the harbor right now. They're in all the 20-foot holes, the Power Harbor hole, upper hole. They're in the mouth of the Myakka, and they are starting to trickle back out on the beaches because that red tide is, like we talked about a little bit, is starting to dissipate out there. So I'm getting some mixed reports out there.
Okay.
Yeah. But definitely the thunderstorms do spook them, but it doesn't seem to bother them as bad in the middle of summer in the harbor. But it's always in the beginning of this of the rainy season out there along the beaches and in the passes.
When they're in the pass real thick along the beaches, you get an afternoon thunderstorm, and those fish are 3, 6, 10 miles offshore.
Yeah, yeah. And especially if you get those weird storms that start like at 4 o'clock in the morning and are hanging out right along the edge of the coast right at sunrise, that really seems to push them off.
Yeah, they'll go way out into the Gulf at that point.
I've heard them running out as far as 30 miles, and it has nothing to do with their spawn.
They want to stay inside the spawn. They're not running out there for the spawn. They're literally running to get away from either A, the noise of the thunder, or B, the actual electricity of the lightning.
Yeah, it's something. It's definitely an oddball little biological thing.
Any guess, Sergeant?
Well, we know that tarpon have a huge swim bladder, probably one of the largest swim bladders for a fish mass, body size. And they also, a swim bladder fills with air, and they can actually use that air to stay down longer than what in oxygen-poor environments. So my assumption is that it's such a big swim bladder, it's probably affected a lot more than the average fish would be affected by it. So, changes in pressure, changes in temperature, sound, those things.
You're thinking with the tarpon, basically, it's not the thunder or the lightning, but it could just very well be the barometric pressure drop, which affects the water pressure, which would make them feel very uncomfortable, and they're getting out of there.
Getting out of there, right.
I'll agree with that being probable because biologically they are different. It's actually not a swim bladder. It's an air bladder.
It's an air bladder, right.
So
I said that wrong.
Maybe the air... No, but it still opens up everything because... Yeah. They don't have that swim bladder the way fish do. They actually have the air bladder, and maybe it's harder for them to control.
Wouldn't they still have a swim bladder of sorts?
No, they gulp the air to actually expand their
When they're rolling on the surface, that's what they're doing. They're filling up their air bladder.
Right, but I would have thought air bladder plus swim bladder. I don't know why. Yeah. I just assumed they'd have a swim bladder as well.
And biologically, I can't say that they don't, but maybe because it is an air bladder and they're relying on that the pressure affects it completely differently.
Yeah, it's got to be like it's like a big balloon instead of a sponge.
But you would almost think they could like burp or toot or something to get rid of the pressure. let's start feeling good. Okay, I feel better now.
Well, maybe they can, but it's such a large amount of air that they have to release out that their dissolved oxygen level drops, so they actually need to get into that deeper water to retain it so they can maintain.
Okay.
Maybe.
If you've ever seen, you usually don't get to see the innards of a tarpon because you release them. But if you've ever seen where they've done the necropsies.
Gone shark fishing chopping them into pieces.
Right,
yeah.
But the swim bladder is huge. It's a big organ on the inside of the fish. So I would assume that they're pretty much affected by changes in pressure.
All right. I'll go along with that. It's a little more, they're afraid of lightning.
Lightning, I have an app on my phone that I think if you're going to fish, we have it here for the radio station. It's Tampa Bay Online, TBO.com. Download their app, their weather app, and it shows the lightning strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows the lightning strikes in just about real time. Within a couple of seconds of lightning hitting something, it appears on your app. And I've been noticing all these strikes in the water around the El Jobin Bridge.
Really?
Quite a few, as a matter of fact, right in the water by the El Jobin Bridge. So But if you're gonna
upriver Hog Island or whatever.
I'm always surprised at how many strikes there are in the river, and I have no idea why that would be. But if you're going to go fishing, you should probably have
a bunch of old iron railroad cars down there that fell off the trestle, and it's got its own magnetic field.
Something. Who knows?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I'd be curious.
Now I got to find this app and start watching and see if there's an accumulation around Elgebine.
Yeah, no, I thought I was, and you know, I live there, so I'm thinking,
right?
Wow, why is lightning striking here all the time?
It could be the gods were upset with you. What have you done to Thor lately? Have you been taking Thor's name in vain?
I probably have. I need to give that damn hammer back.
Yeah.
You know,
you took his hammer.
Well, you borrow things, you know, and you forget to give it back.
You just don't take it back. Yeah, okay. All right, I get how you are.
Nice touch.
Definitely not Yoga Pants Truthful. No, he borrows Thor's hammer, doesn't give it back, and wonder why he's getting hit by lightning.
Yeah. Right.
Red tide's dissipating. Red tide's been around forever. It comes, it goes, it kills stuff, it doesn't. This has by no means been even close. It's not even in the top five red tide events I've ever seen.
No.
Since I've been down here.
No.
There's a debate going on right now about why it's dissipating. Is it being pushed offshore again, so it's still here, you know, in the same volume, and it's just been pushed offshore, or is it just stopping blooming? You know,
quit blooming the same way it always does. Plants, you know, you get a plant and the flower pops out. Now, Robert's got cactus that the flower starts at night and by morning is done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Night blooming cirrus, right?
Yeah. Most of your cactuses bloom at night, but these are like the cirrus family. You've got 10, 12 hours of the actual bloom being open to closed.
All right. And then you've got a rose, and roses have flowers on them for quite a while.
Yeah. Or an orchid that lasts weeks, if not months.
Right. So every plant has a bloom time, if you will. Ragweed is probably a month or something that it blooms and the pollen comes out of it. I don't know.
It makes my life miserable, yeah.
Right. But it's the same thing with red tide. When the plant blooms and that pollen or spore goes out, when it's over, it's just done.
Yeah.
It's not, oh my God, there's a secret society and the Freemasons have come into Port Charlotte and they're negotiating, or they've made a deal with the red tide to
go away.
I can't even go with conspiracy that far.
And you know, that's not as far-fetched as some of the stuff that I've been hearing. So, but basically, Frank's right. It just stops blooming. It does its thing, stops blooming, and then it goes away.
Everything has to reach a climax and then go back
except
down.
Till you get my age. That's all right. Go ahead.
Yeah, so
you walked into that one, Robert.
Yeah, I know. You used the wrong word. But No,
I was talking about moonshine whiskey.
Okay. It's going to dissipate on its own, and it's going to come back some other time.
Oh, I guarantee it dissipates. All right, so you've got the tide blooms, the tide goes away. Mm-hmm. They can last for weeks, months, or years. We've seen red tide last a couple years here. And this by no means it was bad, and it's always bad. It's always horrific, and it's always catastrophic. But if it wasn't for agenda news stations and, oh my God, the world's ending social media.
And don't come to Florida or you're going to die.
Yeah, oh my gosh. What is wrong with the people in social media? I don't understand what's wrong with them.
Most of them are self-serving. Their ultimate goal is the attention for themselves.
Well, I think it's a whole group of people that even their friends won't talk to them anymore. They've become such a negative Nelly that nobody wants to even talk to them. So they sit and type bad stuff on the internet. The world's ending, all this. It gave a voice to a lot of people really shouldn't have a voice.
Well, some of it is very entertaining. Maybe not yoga pants truthful, but definitely entertaining.
Well, and the other thing is like most of them are going to complain about it, but like you were talking about earlier, they don't want to have an answer or try to come up with their own theory of a possible solution that's even remotely realistic.
No, most people just knee-jerk and want, this is what I want to do, and this is it, and we're going to do this. And you say, well, what about this? What about that? What about... That nothing to do with anything. And it's just, to me, I don't know.
By the way, the red tide is starting to dissipate all throughout Boca Grande and the intercoastal, working its way north. But working its way south, we're starting to see a heavier bloom starting to pop up from Captiva to the north end of Sanibel right now.
I'm going to put another map up today. I haven't done one in a couple days because it really didn't change. But today we'll be putting up another map. I'll put up another red tide map on fishandfranks.com. You find it either on the fishing report or on the tide page. And you'll be able to see where it's going. But if you watch in there every time it changes, I put maps up showing where the red tide is and isn't and all that kind of stuff. So, and they're really easy to read. They got a color coding on them, and it's just squiggle marks. And, okay, red is bad. Not red is better.
I think something that we're going to see an immediate effect on, though, over the next couple of days is the Myakka River and the Peace River are going to jump up pretty good, according to the reports
Added Horse Creek to the weather and tides thing. Because it's never really, Horse Creek just doesn't do that much. But it's going to be over 11 foot.
Yep.
Now, the Peace River is sitting at 10.5. Prairie Creek, Horse Creek are all going to be 11 plus.
Yeah.
And these are flood stages. Arcadia, I think flood stage in Arcadia is 11 foot or 12? 12 foot. So they're border flood stage in Arcadia. Horse Creek's definitely going over flood stage. Prairie Creek is. Surprisingly, the Myakka is not as high as those other two.
Really?
But it's up there. It's close. I don't think it's going to crest at flood, but it's going to be within a foot or two of it.
Yeah. I mean, with all the rain we've had inland and localized rain, all of it, this is going to be a weekend where we're going to definitely see some of the effects coming down the river by the middle of next week, which can sometimes be really cool because when you get a really good push of water like this on the upper Peace River, and basically from the mouth of the Myakka River all the way up to the 41 bridge or 41 on Myakka River, it pushes a lot of those weak swimming fish down, like your tilapia, your Mayan cichlids, and especially your armored catfish that have become prolific in both river systems. They can't fight those currents as much. That starts to push them down, which can create a really cool feeding response with the tarpon. Some of those tarpon will move up in there and go into huge feeding schools, and you only have a couple 2 to 4 days of it, it seems like. Sometimes it'll last a week, but more often than not, it's that first initial flush.
And then once the river calms down, it's not flowing as much, those fish tend to swim back upriver, or what happens?
They swim back upriver or manage to get back into the flooded shorelines that have a whole lot more protected habitat form, and then the tarpon leave again. And it'll even happen with snook too, but the tarpon seem to be Johnny on the spot with it. And it's a really cool thing that happens a couple times maybe throughout the whole summer.
So maybe it's that they feel that push of fresh water, that real hard burst of fresh water, go, hey, food's ding, 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 dinner bell's going off. And they go up to check out where that fresh water is coming from because a hard enough push of fresh water.
Could be the sensitive air bladder.
Okay.
I didn't see that coming. I did not see that coming.
The spillways. And it makes sense because when the spillways start flowing, fish come from all over to hit the spillway dams.
You can't catch nothing in that whole canal for whatever a week, and then all of a sudden it rains and you go to the spill dam 500 yards away from, say, your house that you happen to live at, and where are these thousands of fish coming from?
That actually might make sense because I wasn't putting two and two together to get four. I was thinking of it as two equals two, but with the two and two theory, we know that every time it rains and it's been dry for a while, and all of a sudden all the water starts coming over the spillways from the freshwater canals into the saltwater canals, at the bottom of those dams, the snook, the tarpon, and tons of other fish all just zoom in there. And I mean, within 12 hours, they're loaded with fish.
Yeah, it's almost like salmon coming up a river to spawn. I mean, where did they all of a sudden come from?
Yeah, I mean, they're there. Within a few hours of that rain coming over, man, those fish just boil into there. So I guess it'd be the same thing on the river.
Yeah.
I didn't think of it in those terms before, but yeah. So tarpon going to be heading up river. How's that going to do with the shark fishing?
It might push some of the sharks down a little bit further south, you know, with the red tide dissipating. I would assume that they're going to move a little bit out of those holes and maybe move around the corner out into the straits there between Cape Hayes and Boca Grande Pass. If it's a real strong push, it may push them just slightly offshore, but generally those 20-foot holes are deep enough where they can get down in there and still have some salinity and still be pretty content.
Yeah, because salt's heavier in water. Salt sinks to the bottom. Freshwater floats on the top. Really doesn't mix as much as we think it would. You would think a river going into the saltwater would just mix together, but it's surprising how much the fresh water stays on top.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, going out into the Gulf of Mexico, what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico out there?
That's starting to get, well, it's been really good, but it's getting better closer in, the red tide breaking up all over again. 5 miles to 15 miles out, the porgies, grunts, snapper, both lane snapper and lane snapper, starting to do really good. But the thing that tells me, because they're on the bottom, so they aren't always as drastically affected by the red tide because it's more surface. The thing that's starting to really light up out there and tell me it's starting to break apart is Spanish mackerel have moved in closer. Some schools of bonita have been moving in closer. But the barracudas are starting to come back. A couple reports of cobia, and starting to get some reports of the permit out there on some of those near shore reefs also. And all those fish usually run because they like to associate closer to the middle to the surface and as far as the water column goes. So that's a good indicator that things are starting to really liven up. And then as you get out just a little bit farther from, like say, that 15-mile mark to 30-mile mark, the schools of bonita that are out there are unbelievable. There's been some schools of blue runners out there that people have thought or bonita because it was that much of a feeding frenzy going on. Those usually bring in sharks of all sorts of species, both large and small, but also the blackfin tuna, I would imagine. We'll start hearing hopefully some better reports on those over the next week.
That's one fish I really want to go chasing is blackfin tuna.
Yeah.
I was just looking on my phone. I went on fishandfranks.com, the weather and tide page. And according to the wave forecast, we've got the next few days of less than 2 feet seas.
Nice.
I mean, it's supposed to be really calm for the next couple of days. So I think I'd get my flats boat out there with no problem to catch some of those bonita or blackfin. I really want to try that. I know I got a lot of stuff to do. ICAST is next week.
Yeah.
We got ICAST. We're going to be going to ICAST. We've got all kinds of stuff. We're going to, like every year, we drop a few product lines. A lot of companies get bought and sold or change their policies, or the stuff just doesn't sell as good as it used to. Right. And sometimes we can buy, like keep one or two items out of there. Like I keep a few of the jitterbugs, hula poppers, a couple of the Smithwick stuff, but very small numbers of them that sell pretty good, you know. And to me, if it sells two a year, that's good.
Right.
You know, because that means two guys a year aren't disappointed.
Right.
But bigger seller stuff, I mean, I would like stuff that, you know, sold out every week, but that's pretty impossible. But we're looking for new products. We're going to try and reset the lure walls. A couple of the companies are switching where we're not going to have representatives for them. Savage, for one. I don't know if we're keeping Savage. They split up with Akuma, and they're going on their own distribution, their own warehouse, and I don't know what their policies are going to be.
Right.
So I got to talk to them and find out, are we even going to keep them? Because it's great lures, but only if you show somebody.
Right.
If you just see it sitting on the wall, there's no reason to buy one. But if you see it in the water, it works pretty good. Amazing. And Rapala came out with a whole bunch of new stuff, and I'm adding, I think, 25 or 30 new Rapala stuff, and I got some other brands I'm bringing in. But we've got to really figure out what we're going to keep and what we're going to get rid of. We've got a couple of brands that just haven't done much. And what the funniest part about it is we go through and we give something a year or two on the wall, let it build up some time, see if people want to use it, talk to people about it and stuff. Then if it doesn't sell, we put it in the box and we put it up in the warehouse so that when the tent sale comes, we'll put it in the closeout tent.
Right.
And, you know, we liquidate it out, try and at least get some of our money back on it. And that's the day when everybody wants it. I end up going back to the warehouse. We had a thing of hooks that we bought, this whole line of hooks. Pretty cool stuff, but it just didn't sell. I sold more after I put them in the boxes in the warehouse than we did while I was on the wall.
Yeah, and they were on the wall for half of them.
Yeah, and they were on the walls for 2 years. I think we sold 3-5 packs in 2 years. Yeah. As soon as I put them in the warehouse, boxed them up, I bet you I had 24 people come in. I sold almost everything we had. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I never even put them back on the wall because I was afraid they'd stop selling.
Right. Sometimes it takes that, you know, stop it or get rid of it, and then all of a sudden it generates the interest.
Right. Now, if you're listening and you want us to look at some products that maybe we should stock in the store, I'd be happy to shoot me an email, frank@fishandfranks.com. But not rods and reels, boys and girls. Not interested. Don't care. Not doing any more rods and reels. In fact, we're probably going to carry a little less than we did this year. You know, a lot of problems with rods and reel companies right now, and they're having a lot of issues. But lures,
terminal,
anything, you know, line, well, not even so much line. I got so many different kinds of line right now.
But terminal tackle in general, whether it's lures, hooks,
even
some of the new tools that are coming out.
Tools would be a great thing. If somebody knows of a cool tool that we don't carry.
Yeah.
Because it's hard. We're going to go to ICAST and we're going to walk for 3 days. We stop 5-10 minutes in a booth. If we know the people, we might be there 20 minutes. But literally for 3 days, for 8 hours, we are walking and looking at products, trying to figure out, you know, what everybody wants to, you know, what the next greatest thing is or what's old is new again.
Yeah, that's usually half the case. Well, and I saw Patrick Seville's going to be there with his new lure.
Yeah, Band of Angler's going to be there.
Yeah, I saw that advertised in a sport fishing magazine just recently.
Yeah, he was at FTX and it went really well. He's got a big European distributor. One of his old lures, the Magic Swimmer, I want to take these out, do a little trolling and casting with them for tarpon because they've got the corkscrew on the back of it. And I want to put a gulp on the back of that.
One of those big gulp curl tail grubs or just a gulp in general?
I'm thinking maybe the curl tail grub. It's pretty big because they've got I think that's the 165 and then the 190. And both these have the double hook, not the treble hook on it. And they're made for a trailer. And I don't know why I've carried these things on and off for years. I never bothered to look for the trailer thing on it. But I'm going to take them out and start trolling. I bought some other lures. I can't remember the name of the company. We're going to try trolling as well. And once we get into these, I'm going to try and do some tarpon. My goal is the end of this fall, for next season going in, to be able to say, troll this with this, troll that with that, get a line of trolling lures for tarpon. Because they get so hard to find and you're drifting, you're getting so frustrated. If you could just troll down the harbor and have a reasonable chance of catching a tarpon, that is my goal.
Covering a lot more ground and making it very much more probable.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons I'm not saying we're getting rid of Savage lures, because they do have that Savage trout that's awesome to troll. But we're going to see. I don't know what we're doing. So go ahead, RJ.
I need to cut in just for a minute. I want to say thank you to the Community Foundation of Sarasota County. We did the 2018 Giving Challenge with them, and the check came in today. And it's a really big check, and we're quite excited about it.
Yay! Are we going to be here another week?
Yeah, we'll make it another week, looks like, boys. So again, thank you to the Community Foundation of Sarasota County and the Patterson Foundation. You guys are what keeps us on the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Patterson Foundation. And what was the name of the other one?
And the Community Foundation of Sarasota County.
Awesome. Sarasota County, you rock, man. So
it's all about the community. That's why we're able to do this.
That's right.
So we got music, or are we still here, or are we leaving? What are we doing, RJ?
Well, we play music.
Okay. I'm ready for a little music. Cha, cha, cha. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Fish, see you next week, boys and girls. Bye.
Fish, fish, fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fish.